questions that could reveal your purpose in life? What if there were questions that could surface the change most meaningful to you? And what if answering those questions would give you the power to ignite? Welcome to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. These are big conversations that lead to self-discovery. Together, let's embark on the leader's journey and ignite meaningful change. Leadership demands a lot of us, so much that it can be tempting to turn away, if only to protect yourself from the barbs that come from challenging the status quo. In this episode, Jonathan grapples with his introverted self that tempts him to keep his vision to himself. As much as he may want to share the demands of leadership equally with others, he also learns that the responsibility for igniting his vision is largely his.
How does, and this is perhaps an across-the-board you and Marianne question, how does the expression of these significant new initiatives that birth from your vision, how does that feel within the context of rallies?
Sorry, just...
Yes.
How do we get to the rally?
After all of this lands.
Yes.
And this is public content.
Mm-hmm.
Broadcasting that we will, you, let's not be silly, you and Marianne will engage in rallies, these public conversations where you expand on, extrapolate, and help people connect to and ignite them to act with you. Expressing significant new initiatives.
It feels good here in this space because it's the levels of trust here among us.
Yeah.
Before we started, I wouldn't be doing this unless the levels of trust were already very high.
Yeah.
From the beginning. But through conversation, the trust only deepens. So talking about everything we're talking about feels very good to me, because I feel safe and at home. Yeah, I feel at home here in this conversation. I know that I'm, and this has come up in the conversations, I know that I'm averting my gaze from the question of how this plays out in the future and how I bring it to life. But that's okay for now, because I trust in the process as well. And the process that we're going through together, the process is telling me, don't worry, focus on, we focused first on the vision and what the vision is, and trying to find the right words to express and give shape and form to the vision.
Yeah.
And now we're on amplify.
Yeah.
So it's starting to become a little bit more uncomfortable for me because I'm starting to talk about other people. And there's a natural discomfort there because it's very easy and comfortable to talk about your vision where you just sit with it and hold it yourself. When you start bringing in other people, either because you need them or because you're going to communicate the vision to them, whichever what it is, it's naturally more uncomfortable because for obvious reasons, it's moving from something that you hold yourself where you are solely and uniquely responsible yourself. So nobody else can get hurt. Yeah. So that you take comfort from that. I can sit here and sound stupid and say silly things, but that's okay. Nobody else gets hurt. I'm not involving anybody else. But as you move into the outside world and these other people that we're talking about, and in this first instance, not the constituents, not the people who will receive at the end of the process, but who, and this is my own paraphrasing, and I'm open to gentle prompting and correction on this. Mm-hmm. It feels a little bit like team building at the moment, the stage we're in now, a little bit.
Nice.
The first, not the team that would deliver anything, but the team around
the construction, the building, me, the initial.
Right at the beginning.
Yeah.
A very intimate, close team for that first moment of creation and standing on the new ground.
Yeah. Okay. So we're plucking.
So we're not at a rally yet. Well, we might be in a cozy pub, okay. But not a rally.
Maybe before and after. The pub can be like the sandwich, the bread.
Yeah.
So we pluck on this public chord to start the day.
Mm.
And I have to ask about the correlation between the public and hurt. No one gets hurt if I keep this to myself. Walk into that a little bit if you could.
It's the simple idea that I want to feel that whatever I think, whatever I imagine doing, whatever idea lands in my own head, it is okay. And it's for me to decide what I do with that. It's for me to decide whether I share that with somebody else. And if I want, I can simply keep my mouth shut and keep it private and not share it with anybody else. That's where the sense of comfort comes from. You are responsible alone for whatever you're thinking. And you have the freedom to decide whether you move forward with that or not. Moving to the outside and starting to speak to others about your vision and what we were discussing yesterday, which is something very immediate. Who are the people in whose hearts and minds this vision would resonate? And who might be the people who would help me make this change?
Mm-hmm.
We're immediately moving into a public, to use your word, a public space here.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know, to publish something. We think of a book immediately. You think of a book, paper. But in the deeper sense here, it's about sharing the idea with the first person, the first group of people mm-hmm. around you.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to be difficult in some way. Even if you imagine to yourself that there will be a receptive audience here, and even if you imagine that, even if you're very, very sure that this vision is going to resonate with them and will be meaningful to them, you're still opening yourself up to some form of indifference, rejection.
Scrutiny, does that bother you?
Not in the sense that...
Cool, huh?
No, because I think that scrutiny is... If you are disciplined mm-hmm. and rigorous within your own mind
yes.
about your vision,
and you've clear already, in seeing it.
You've already started that journey mm-hmm. of being rigorous with yourself and scrutinizing your own idea. This is not the same as censoring yourself, because otherwise that leads to paralysis. You can do two things at the same time. You can have imagination and creativity and take a leap of faith, but also be rigorous in how you express it. So when we're working to find the right words, that's not slowing things down and turning away from the vision or feeling nervous. No, it's engaging with the vision, giving it life, giving it heart, and preparing it for an audience.
Beautiful.
Yeah, those two things go hand in hand. As you're looking for the right words, that's you trying to give the right shape to your vision. But obviously you are also, when we try to find the right words, we are thinking also about the people who are going to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Jean, are you listening? The reason I'm asking is because this speaks so much to the discomfort that comes with Jean facing the potential of being questioned when he expresses himself. So scrutiny for him is a massive, not good situation.
Mm.
So to hear how Jonathan positioned that, does that do anything to you?
Well, I see where you're going with that, and how you feel this idea of maybe hurting people, or the word rejection. I could resonate with that.
Mm.
But what came to me was we touched a little bit about that yesterday, this idea that when you're in service and it's something bigger than you, you can't let it stop you, you know? Mm. So this idea that it's not about you, it's about the message that you have to deliver or a vision that you have to bring to the world, like pulled you, the you as a human, out of the equation. So it kind of removed the this idea of this fear of being rejected. Nice. Now it's to get there, to get into this space where it's not about you anymore.
Okay, so let's shift the perspective here for a moment. Maybe both of you will hear this in different ways. Jonathan, you were referring to sharing your vision with those who can help you with this change. And Marianne, I appreciate that that's similar to some of the wording on the cards. And this isn't about blowing those cards out of the water at all. Having said that, to add to that, let's look at the perspective of it's not about them helping you at all. What if it's about them having the same responsibility as you? What if you are asked to verbalize?
To give voice to.
To give voice to what collectively you are all responsible for. And I don't mean the whole world. I mean a very specific group of individuals that are all responsible for the same thing. In addition to that shared responsibility, you have the additional responsibility of giving voice to it so that you ignite it, so that you catalyze the movement into actualizing it. How does that sit?
Yeah, that feels right. Jean, come in. I can see you're nodding vigorously here.
Well, it does feel right. And the image is that came, you know, when the first, the groundbreaking, that's how it feels.
Okay, cautionary note, gentlemen, because the responsibility of leadership can feel very heavy. And I want to go into hurt in a moment, Jonathan, but cautionary note here is if you think of initiatives you may have remotely witnessed, and I'll point to one, it must have been after the financial crisis, the Occupy Wall Street initiative. So there was a group of people who shared a vehemence about changing the system. And whoever began to voice it was equally vehement that there be no leader for that initiative. What happened to the initiative? No leader. It was rudderless. So yes, in your cases, absolutely, you know, the additional responsibility of giving voice to it, but it is more than giving voice to it.
I hear you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's totally the starting point and the continuum.
Yeah. Go ahead.
There's also something here for me about conversation and the nature of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I imagine a situation where in that first moment of creation and then publication of the vision, where I alone am standing, I am standing alone on the new ground. And then I have a conversation with a group of people, mm-hmm. or it might be one person, who I think this vision is going to resonate with and they might be able to help me. That conversation can't be me talking. And then at the end of it, somebody saying, yeah, okay, that sounds good. I'll help you. That's not how it goes. If this is a vision that has heart and soul to it and energy, it has to fill that other person with something, yeah?
Yeah, it's not from the mind either, is it?
No.
I think that makes sense. Isn't enough to propel them into action.
Yeah.
So then let's just go ahead.
I mean, I'd almost be disappointed if the person said, yeah, that sounds good, sign me up. Yeah.
I've had that.
I'd almost be disappointed.
Yeah.
I wouldn't walk away saying, oh, that went well. Yeah. I'd say, hang on, what
went
wrong?
Did they hear anything I said?
Yeah, well done,
what went
Jonathan.
Wrong?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so if we pluck a little harder on that public chord, on the harpist chord, mm-hmm. knowing that this can be a conversation, a really rich, fulfilling, satisfying conversation for all parties, does the introvert in you relish the invitation to hold rallies a little more?
The introvert in me has always relished the challenge of fighting with itself and not allow that to define me. And whether that was putting my hand up to audition for a school play, which I did several times at school and then not alone in university as well, where you're seeing that as something that's fun and that you enjoy doing, but you know as well that it's a way of trying to remold who you are a little bit.
You're
aware of challenging your own, you know, introversion here.
Wow. I hear you, yeah.
Can we go into hurt for a moment?
Yeah.
And I'm also aware, Jonathan, that like me, you've spent much of your professional career giving words to others. Happily, you know, certainly when I ran my crisis communications practice, not only giving them the words, the scenarios, the what's if, who do you reach here, what do you say when, all of that, it was so gratifying because you could see, however complex and potentially damaging the situation was to them personally, to them professionally, to their organizations, you could see a way out of that potential hurt and come to fruition with, you know, as I would say to my clients, with their reputations and operations intact. So causing harm, causing hurt is anathema to someone with heart. But where do you see the hurt coming from if you step out of that, quote, back room that you and I are accustomed to being in? Where do you see the hurt potentially coming from, speaking up?
Imagining it right here, right now, and where we are in the process, we're sort of right in the middle now with Amplify, it's the hurt that would come from derision. So I imagine people laughing at the vision.
So the hurt is your hurt, and not their hurt.
Yeah, I don't see how my vision could hurt anybody in itself.
Okay, good.
I hope it would. I do hope it would destroy.
Well, it'll challenge the vested interests.
Yeah,
yeah.
And okay. Assumptions.
The status quo will change.
The status quo ideas and assumptions that have been baked deeply into. Yeah,
yeah,
deeply baked into our.
And that might be shattering to some.
Yes. That I would want there to be pain there.
Okay.
Not a human pain, not a human suffering, but a real sense of something crumbling.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
But my own pain is sensing so the derision of...
And that gets back to you, Catherine, and your question, you know, about hurt. Like,
you know, I work with a lot of people who are very concerned about their... When they speak up, they will hurt others. Mm-hmm. There's an assumption that they're wielding
the truth
of power.
Will hurt.
Yeah. Something about them using their power will either be contorted or they will do something that they didn't realize they did that results in significant suffering. I don't relate. And I can see
But again, that's hurting others. What about Jonathan hurting himself? Any counsel there?
Can you give me a question, a solid question about it?
So by speaking up, he may be subject to derision, humiliation, maybe even anger at what you're saying, and people might get you're provoking some.
Intellectually, I'm comfortable with the idea of that idea being at the heart of my vision. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm completely at peace with that, more than at peace. I'm emotionally committed to that. Mm-hmm. But... It's these little voices, the good voices, that are not—they're not trying to slow you down. They're not censoring you, but they're saying, "Be careful." Mm-hmm. And so I'm aware of that. Yeah.
So this links back to yesterday's discussion on, maybe it was 2 days ago, the process of shifting out of the writing being for the writer and the writer being out of the equation, that shift where it's not about writing for yourself anymore.
Mm.
There are three language-related concepts that I'll put on the table here to address how one can be completely unfazed by any pushback or rejection, derision, whatever it may be, when speaking up. And the first is pronoun. Mm-hmm. And this may enter into a bit of a conversation. The vision versus my vision.
Mm. Mm.
There is a deep importance to claiming your responsibility in the scene, on the stage of your life. At the same time, the identification with it, allowing it to define you, very slippery slope.
Mm.
And so if you'll often hear, I don't use the word vision, but we can hear. So if you hear me speak to what I represent, it is always the scene, the objective, the vision. It's not mine. And I do that very purposefully.
It's coming through you, but it's not yours.
I really do that purposefully.
Yeah.
Mine is the commitment to follow through. Mine is not the...
The acceptance of the responsibility mm-hmm. and the role.
That's, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So when I erased the my pronoun, the me, the mine, everything associated with the egoic association with it, it cleaned up what I voice. It cleaned up my relationship with the responsibility. And the more individuals you are accountable to, the more overwhelming it can get very quickly, especially when you enter into the stage of the journey where you vocalize. So give voice to. So it was an incredibly helpful approach, and it can feel very destructive if you have already started to root into the identification with it.
Can you, thank you, Catherine, just let me
jump in for a second.
Totally okay, fine, perfect. Yeah. If you think of yourself as an emissary for it, an ambassador for it. And I often use the term ambassador when we get to messaging, because when you start to deliver the messaging around the vision that helps you realize the vision, when you do it right, in the listeners with whom it's resonating, with whom it is significant and meaningful, they then, if you can envision this, they leave that rally or they stop reading what you've written or they leave the communication in the room and they remember what you said and then they become ambassadors for it as well. Whether someone says to them, oh, what did Jonathan or Jean have to say? If they can repeat the essence of what you've said, they're delivering your messages for you beyond you. And that together you're building awareness and action that comes out of that.
Having said that, I have absolutely, this is me putting in a bit of my personal perspective, I have absolutely no preference as to whether those you call the ambassadors in this scene mm-hmm. follow through.
Your work is different, though.
But isn't that interesting?
It's very different, yeah. Yeah.
So there's an element of the attachment to the outcome that even for someone like Jonathan is important so that it doesn't destroy
exactly.
him.
Exactly, yeah. It's very different, Catherine.
And yeah. then the second element is the future tense, Jonathan. Mm-hmm. If you were to speak in the present, and reference to historical events won't work in this case, so there is that past reference sometimes. But if you speak in the present, even when you speak to an outcome that is on deck to take place next, you erase a great deal of doubt that could have otherwise been infused into your words, into your vision, into your message. And I recall we spoke of this a bit in London. It's going to be all right. Well, how the hell is it now? And reverbalizing that to say it is all right shifts so much in the invisible between the individuals speaking. So that air changes. The doubt goes away. And doubt is huge. Doubt is what will trigger the pushback. Yes, fear, absolutely, in changing what they want to keep the same. For those who are the emissaries, for those who are to support and ignite with you, it is paramount that you watch your words. If for no other reason, keep the egoic identification if you want, if for no other reason, to eliminate as much doubt as possible from your words. That creates... And you don't even have to buy into this. You can waver on the inside. The way you present yourself has to be unwavering and emanate a certainty that, if nothing else, gives them access to reassurance.
Yeah, I think all of that makes very, very clear and good sense to me. It's a moment of, we can carry two things at the same time. We can carry two contradictions at the same time, an absolute certainty in the need for our vision and why it works for us, but a very natural doubt about whether it will resonate with others. This is the moment before that first conversation.
There you go.
If I take a step back from a second, take a step back and listen to what both you, Marianne and Catherine, have been saying over the last 10 minutes, I'm wondering if we haven't staked out two extremes here, very helpful extremes to be avoided, so that we search for some sort of middle way here. The example you gave, Marianne, was great, about Occupy Wall Street. And boy, how we wish that had gone further.
And it was at a time of crisis.
Yeah. And I think what you said, absolutely right. I also think my way of forgiving the movement and everybody involved would say it was also, I think, taking on the Death Star.
Yes. Yeah.
And we don't always have George Lucas and Luke Skywalker to help us destroy the Death Star. Sadly, we live in a real world sometimes where the force, the real Death Star, the real forces are, again, it's about assumptions, not just assumptions being baked into our size, but the real power, the real centers of power.
Yeah, I would add to that it was well-intentioned that there be no hierarchy within that movement. Mm. Well-intentioned, democratic democracy at its best, we have an equal voice. And as a result, you know, democracy within an organization, within a movement, is great to a degree. But any movement that is igniting change needs a leader. And when you extrapolate that, broaden it into an organization that actually forms around an initiative, and I'm going to go to corporation right now. You may work inside a corporation. You may have a tremendously senior role. With that go big responsibilities. And yet, you don't have absolute control. You are operating in what is best seen, Morley's words, as a benevolent dictatorship. There is someone at the very top, the chair, the board of directors, whomever. They're the ones, shareholders, with absolute authority. So you have to recognize and look historically, look at the Gandhis, the Mandelas. Did they value everyone around them tremendously. Of course they did. And did they see them as equals? Generally, yes, of course they did. But did they see themselves as having to step up above?
What do you think that conversation was like for Gandhi?
Well, I heard, you know, I've studied him to some degree. I am no Gandhi expert. But some of the declarations he made, equal to Mandela, when Mandela was on trial, his speech, and there is still a recording of it, I remember listening to it years ago, both of those men, in effect, almost verbally, said the same things, in effect saying, we're willing to live or die by this. It was so significant to them. So those were the conversations. They put themselves completely on the line. Their very existence.
Which is, and listening to you now, Marianne, is it takes me right back to what was happening on the Maidan exactly 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So December 2013, exactly 10
in
years
Ukraine.
Ago. In Ukraine, in the center of Kiev, where... Not so much in December, the culmination of the violence, the awful climax of the violence arrived in February. The stage was being set in November and December. But exactly as you were saying, it required a depth of courage, which said, "I don't know if I'm coming back."
Yeah.
Tonight.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm coming back home tonight.
Yeah.
To get to that point. And it's a, I think there's a great quote. I think it's Albert Camus who said, it's the moment where you accept that death is better than repression.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my personal paraphrasing of that is, at some point, it is not enough to see the darkness. You have to march into it. Yeah.
What level of courage does that take?
Right.
Right. And in your case, Jonathan, if you, as you do that, metaphorically, if the voices of dissent get louder and louder around you, screaming at you, as they did, you know, with Churchill, he was a lone voice when he saw the threat. Everyone else wanted appeasement with Hitler. He was a lone voice. He was ridiculed for it before he became prime minister. So the voices of dissent are going to be there for whatever reason.
Yes. Your point about leadership and how a movement can ultimately fail, or one of the reasons of it failure of its failure can be. I agree with that completely. And it strikes me that what we're perhaps talking about here is the difference between resistance and change. So sometimes resistance is necessarily diffuse, grassroots, unorganized, because it's spread over geography, demography.
Yeah.
And the urgency of resisting is enough.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Is enough to deliver
it. It hits a climactic point at some point.
Yeah. But then the question is, does that enough for change and to get to the next stage?
Yeah. Right. And back to leadership. If and visually aware of your new ground concept. So let's say that you see what could be. You're an emissary for it, as you are, Jonathan, and you are, Jean, in a different way, in your own way, each of you. So you're an emissary for it. You see it, and we'll use your metaphor of new ground, Jonathan. So you see it so clearly, you want to step forth. You're willing to step forth. Now, if you look at, and we're back in Amplify, if you look at how you're speaking about it, if you are able to express it so compellingly that all of us want to act with you. We want to help you. We're determined to help you realize it. And there's a door to this building. What are the odds of us each stepping outside that door at the very same instant onto the new ground? Can we all fit through the door at once? We don't know where the new ground is. Only you can see it.
This is, we're speaking about the power of language here, aren't we? Mm-hmm. It's the power of language that gets us all through the door into
right.
the next room.
But leaders, as much as, again, I'm going back to equality and shared responsibility, mm-hmm. yes. Mm-hmm. But do we all fit through the door at the same, do we all land in the same place at the very same instant?
No. And that's...
When we don't even know the ground, the only one knowing the ground is there is you.
Yes. And that the sort of, the words I've scribbled down here are courage, responsibility, and accountability to oneself mm-hmm. in the first instance. Mm-hmm. That has to happen. And this is where you put your name to something.
Yes.
You yeah. put your name to something.
You do.
And this was going to be the other extreme for me. If looking at what both of you have said, Catherine and Mariano, in this opening, that if at one extreme we have a complete absence of leadership, so a movement which has great power mm-hmm. and moral energy behind it, but ultimately fizzles out because of an absence of leadership. And then if we have at the other extreme, the vision which is synonymous with the man, but ultimately is the man, and where in the end there is only the man, that is equally unproductive.
Because it only belongs to, quote, the man.
Yes. And so we're quickly here in the realm of self-promotion, an idea or an offering mm-hmm. that is ultimately about promoting the man. So we have these two extremes. And if I'm looking for a path through this, it's this idea that we do in this first instance of having the vision and then moving forward with it, as you said, Marianne, going through the door to the new ground, you have to, I feel that you have to put your name to it. Mm-hmm. You have to take responsibility. You have to be accountable to yourself.
You have to personify it first.
Yeah, absolutely. All of this.
There can't be any wavering within you.
No.
Because, you know, your voice will echo. And if your voice is wavering in the first place, it won't go very far.
No. And that's absolutely right.
I think leadership is complex, and I don't want to oversimplify this. But I do, as you were speaking, I need to ask you, Jonathan, are you familiar with Canada geese? You're here in Canada right now.
I think I see Canada geese in Copenhagen, where we live.
Oh, you may. They go far
they
and wide, those
beautiful,
little rascals.
Beautiful creatures.
Yeah, they are yeah. beautiful creatures. Have you seen them in flight?
Yes, and I think I want to say, first of all, I've heard them in flight.
Oh, wow.
And
as they're taking off, they're yeah. noisy oh, little yeah. darlings. Jean, are you familiar with how they operate? Mm-hmm. Can you explain to Jonathan?
They tend to target cars.
That's a whole other issue.
Well, they fly in a triangle shape, right? So there's always one in the front leading the crew.
Leading the flock. There may be a special word for geese. What's the word? A gaggle of geese? I don't know. Yeah. And what happens when that bird, that goose, tires?
Another bird takes the lead. So they interchange position. So there's always one.
There's always one. Yeah. Guiding. Yeah. So in your case, Jonathan, and in all cases, there can be succession to leadership. it may be that you need to get us first on, help us see there's new ground so that we move onto that new ground. That may be your role in it. And then there may be an opportunity for someone else to take on that leadership from there. Does that feel any better?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he says with relief.
Yeah. A huge sense of relief. Huge sense of relief.
And that gets back to Catherine's point about it's not just your vision. You can start to evoke it.
Mm.
And then the vision carries on.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that feels right to me. And it confirms my sense that if there is real truth in the vision, it will resonate with people.
Mm-hmm. It's resonating with us.
Another word I've scribbled here is public. We brought the word public into the conversation yesterday, and it's for me it's such an important word because it seems to capture so much of what we are losing.
Mm-hmm.
So not just public housing, public ownership of the things that should be publicly owned, like our water supply, for example, public broadcasters, but also public space. And we talked about a fragmentation of our cultural and social life that can go so far that we start to question whether we are actually experiencing the same reality day in, day out, which is, you know, the more I think about that, the more trouble I think we're in, if that's where we are. So, but I see my vision as public. Yeah. We had a very good discussion about to what extent it was political, to what extent it was cultural. I think we settled on a good compromise, which is that it's both. There is a big, big overlap of the cultural and the political. So it's a vision which is political and cultural. Cultural particularly because of its love of language and its desire to rescue language. But also public. It's a public vision where this vision can only work if it has a public ideal running through it. A deep desire, an urgent desire to restore a sense of the public, the public good, the public space. And I'm saying that as trying to find my way to this first moment where, yes, I'm standing there on my own, but there is a confidence in me and a confidence in the vision because I know in my heart that it has a public mission within it.
We've talked about the rejection of the vision.
The derision.
Yeah.
Of the vision.
Well, what if there's an unexpected excitement coming from the crowd? So for the listeners, there have been arm-waving moments here when Jonathan shares a part of the vision and we get so excited.
Yes, that's me. My arms, without any intention, just go sky high in a second.
And that's real. When you speak to such a depth of truth, you pluck every chord in that individual. So how would you deal with that if instead of the derision you get incredible excitement, embrace even, without your saying all that much?
Mm.
Will that make you uncomfortable?
Yes, mm-hmm. Because of who I am. But I think, again, this is why this process is very good, because I understand that part of this process, one of the threads running through it is about confidence and finding confidence again
mm-hmm. and amplifying you and your leadership, your willingness, your ability to recognize yourself as a leader and to develop all of that capability.
Yeah.
What if there are some in the crowd who not only fully support you, but who seem for one reason or another to understand the significance of your vision seemingly more than you do?
Is this my mum you're talking about?
It could be. Or it even could be yesterday at lunch. Why do you people jump on the homelessness thing? And all of us, yes, we are. We really are. Because of the significance in it. Does that make any of this experience less uncomfortable when you know that your supporters support you even beyond where you have seen so far?
I can only say yes, because who doesn't want to be heard?
Okay, yeah. Great.
Who doesn't want to be heard?
You don't feel like they're keeping something from you. Give it to me. You know I should know, so tell me.
No, it's.
Oh, you're patient at heart.
Yeah, very, very patient. But again, one of the great values of the conversation we're having now is to see the other side of things. We had a great part of the conversation yesterday was about how, through conversation, we see our own blindness. And we see our own inability to communicate to others what we are seeing, sometimes because it just seems so obvious.
And if you think of that, how many of us have read a book and then seen a film version of it that doesn't at all resemble what we pictured as we read?
Yeah. And where the images that are presented to us seem thin.
And not true. They seem false even.
Yeah, yeah. So a film which in spite of all the image and the sound, feels thin compared to the book. And that's what's that saying? You're right. It talks about the failure of film sometimes. And I say this as somebody who's, you know, worships the art of film. But you're absolutely right. What it's saying is the power of the human imagination. It speaks to the absolutely brilliant, wonderful, astonishing and mysterious power of the human imagination, which is very relevant, I think, to the conversation we're having now.
And to the importance of helping them see it.
Yes, yes. And I know, knowing you, Marianne, and your great work in communication, this will come at the how part of the process towards the end.
And I'm amplify. Resisting that. No, amplify as well, actually.
Yeah, sure.
Most of it in amplify.
Yeah.
Tell me, Jonathan, what aspect of your vision do you decidedly disregard?
The bit I disregard, if this is a way of answering the question of why I would imagine derision, and perhaps even from the inner circle in the beginning, my deepest fear at the moment is nostalgia. Is my vision nostalgic? Is it not a real desire to step onto new ground, but to recover something that's lost? Now, this has come back and forth into my thinking over the last 60 hours or more with you, and I'm at peace on that. I know deep down this is not a nostalgic vision, because we've talked our way through this, and my best answer is that I'm not interested in taking us to a new planet. That does not excite me or interest me anyway.
Or replicating exactly what used to be.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. So in answer to your question, Catherine, that's the part that worries me, if you like, in a good and healthy way. and forces me to get back again and again and again to the vision and the words of the vision to make sure that it's not just nostalgia speaking and a sense of loss and a desire to go back to something. The thing is, if you're clear-sighted, you know. If you're clear-sighted, you know that you can never, never, never go back.
Clear-sighted, love that.
Are we ready, Marianne, to discuss your stance on the rally question?
The moment you raised that long ago now, Catherine and I thought I'd say to you, Jonathan, welcome to my world. Mm-hmm. I've been hearing about rallies for
6 years.
Yes, 6 years. Absolutely. From the moment Illumify emerged. And to whatever degree, there was some preparation for me to get to that stage. And I say this as someone who, even in my youth, young childhood, won all kinds of public speaking awards and regionally within Montreal, locally and regionally. And so, and I say that only to say I'm very comfortable with being on a stage most of the time, even though I've designed my career not to be in the last 20 years. I want to put other people on stages. So the concept or the prospect of a rally with lots of people looking at me and listening to me, on one level, felt right. On the other level, a little voice in me that I'd groom for a lifetime at some level was, who do you think you are? And I think everybody can, I hope everyone can relate to that in their own way. I have been preparing for it in my work. A year ago, I actually added an offer to Illumify in which I would go out and do speaking engagements. And right on the heels of that, the prospect of doing a podcast emerged. And I'm doing multiples at once. And in addition to my executive work, it hasn't left the bandwidth for much in terms of speaking engagements. But that said, when podcast emerged, I thought, oh, okay, well, that's a form of rally if anyone listens to them. We're reaching out beyond us. What is a rally? A rally, to me, is a group, a large group even, of people listening with whom you can share what is significant. My work here is to help ignite those who are here to ignite meaningful change, to help ignite both them, their leadership, their ability to lead, their willingness to lead, and to help them express their leadership so that, in both words and actions, so it will ignite the change they are here to impart, to lead. So, you know, there are different means of doing that. This feels good to me. These are important conversations, part of the appeal, of course, is my hope that anyone listening is not only following you, Jonathan, and you, Jean, on your own journeys of transformation into leaders and the ignition of your change, but as they listen, my hope is to each of you, any of you listening, that you are applying this to your own lives, to what you may have a sense of is a reason for your being here. This may, you know, we can go many paths in our lives. Some feel more aligned with us than others. Certainly when Illumify emerged for me, I had already for years, of course, been doing communication, but also been devoted to leadership. My previous company was called Leading Communicators. So it was aligned. Different level of alignment, but it was definitely aligned. It may not be. You may be listening to this going, what really matters to me is X and I've spent all of my life doing Y. And now I know why Y is not fulfilling me and I gotta go to X. So my hope is that as you listen, you will apply this to your world, to your life. Because my biggest frustration the last number of years has been, I want to get this to as many beings as possible. And I work with executives one-on-one, and at that rate, it would take me 1,000 lifetimes. So this is a means of imparting this to more than one through the podcasts. You will each be doing that because they will hear you. Now, I will admit that I thought, oh, good, that's my rally. I can, quote, stop there. Do it from the, you know, in this case, we're doing it from different international locations. We're not done yet. We may end up in Copenhagen next, Jonathan. And in Jean, your case, we're in our own habitat in Toronto. It may take us all over the world, and that's fantastic. The thing is, when you know what you're here to do, you welcome every opportunity to express it, to reach those that you're meant to reach, to work with those that you're meant to work with.
Beautifully said. And it's layer upon layer, isn't it, that reveals?
It is. And actually, it pinpoints amplify because, you know, we spoke about concentric circles when we got to your who, Jonathan. It's equally true of you. As you go through amplify, you are expanding bit by bit by bit, right? So who you were yesterday is going to be different from who you are today. Do you feel that?
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Okay, good. As Shakespeare so aptly expressed it, uneasy lies the head that wears a crown. Leadership can come with a heavy load, scrutiny, derision, rejection. You can see the appeal of sharing that load, if only for self-preservation. But leadership doesn't come with equal shares. It takes one leader to draw those who'll respond to the vision of change. They will then share the load, but it is the leader's responsibility to evoke the vision and align them in thought and action to ignite it. Perhaps the Canada Goose metaphor brought Jonathan some comfort for when he may weary. But when you know what you're here to do, it can be meaningful enough to compel you to carry on leading until your change ignites, no matter how uneasy lies the head beneath the crown. The leader's journey continues. Stay tuned. If listening to this Illumify Game Changer podcast is of value to you, please like it on this platform and share it with those who could ignite meaningful change. It's here, as am I, to be of service. I'm Marianne Gobet. Thank you for accompanying us on the leader's journey. To fully experience the passage to igniting meaningful change, subscribe to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. To learn more about the Illumify Game Changer and how to embark on your own leader's journey, please visit Illumify's website at illumifyinstitute.com. You matter. Step up. Speak up. Together, let's ignite meaningful change.